from the heartland of America and the gateway into the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Boy, I thought maybe we're going to have some pretty rough, severe storms rolling into the St. Louis area. It was not to be. Missed us so far. Tornadoes, though, rolling off into Illinois. I wonder if my dream will come true. Next hour, gripping stories of extrasensory perception, ESP, by Dr. Sally Rhinefeather and Michael Schumacher. And you can take, during tonight's program, an ESP test. I'll tell you a little bit about that next hour when we get into the program with our guests. In Illinois, an ex-convict accused of killing his daughter and one of her playmates has been admitted to stabbing the girl to death in the suburban Illinois community of Zion. Jerry Hobbs, he's 34 years old. He was charged with two counts of first-degree murder. He was denied bond. Hobbs' 8-year-old daughter, Laura, and her 9-year-old classmate, Crystal Tobias, were found dead Monday, a day after disappearing while riding their bikes in a park in the town about 40 miles north of Chicago. According to an assistant Lake County state's attorney, Hobbs told investigators that he went to the park to bring his daughter home. In his statement, Hobbs said that after an argument, he punched his daughter and her friend and then stabbed them. Laura was stabbed at least 20 times, including once in each eye. The nation's capital was given the green light Wednesday afternoon, about 1 hour after a small airplane violated restricted airspace over the city, forcing the very rapid evacuation of the White House, the U.S. Capitol building, and the Supreme Court. A pilot and a student pilot from Pennsylvania to an air show in North Carolina were taken into custody after their flights sparked a frenzy of activity that tested the Capitol's post-9/11 response system. The government decided not to press charges. It was just merely a mistake. Two F-16 military jets scrambled over to Washington from Andrews Air Force Base just outside the city in Maryland. The jet pilots met the plane, which came within 4 miles of the U.S. Capitol and 3 miles of the White House, and escorted it out of the Air Defense Identification Zone to Frederick, Maryland, about 50 miles northwest of the city. The jets then returned back to airbase. The men were identified as Hayden Schaefer of Pennsylvania and Troy Martin of Akron, Pennsylvania, according to a federal law enforcement official. North Korea has completed removing spent fuel rods from an atomic reactor, enabling it to harvest more weapons-grade plutonium. It was the communist state's latest provocation amid deadlocked talks over its nuclear program. A North Korean foreign ministry spokesman said the country has now successfully finished removing 8,000 fuel rods from the reactor, which was shut down last month, so now it can bolster its nuclear arsenal. Now, North Korea kicked out international nuclear inspectors in late 2002, making it impossible to verify the claim. So nobody really knows if this is true or not. But you know what? Better to err on the side, right? And you have to assume that North Korea is doing what it claims to be doing. Los Alamos, New Mexico, a former Los Alamos nuclear lab scientist fired last year in a security scandal that was not his fault, by the way, that shut down the lab for several weeks. He has now died. He's a 41-year-old man. He died of pancreatitis at the Los Alamos hospital. His death came 2 days after he publicly rejoiced over the news that the lab's director was leaving. That's what he said. At that time, he said, every table is packed and the beer is flowing, as he celebrated with fellow scientists at a Los Alamos eatery. The man was fired by the director, Pete Nanos, on September 23rd following a security scandal. The man said he was fired because he did not immediately return from a family vacation during a lab investigation into two classified computer disks that were thought to be missing. Remember that story? The apparent security breach forced Nanos to shut down the lab for several weeks. Now, the man in question, who was fired because of all this, claimed that he was merely a scapegoat over the disks, which investigators then concluded just never existed. The mistake was blamed on a clerical error. But by that time, the individual was fired. He has and then accepted a job as a contractor at another company. Yeah, but he has died. Another scientist died. We had another one, as I reported just a few days ago, from Australia, dying in a plane crash. In a moment, our guest this hour will be Stephen Quayle. We're going to talk with Stephen about the deaths of these scientists, these microbiologists, the continuing process by North Korea to try to grow its nuclear arsenal, what Iran may be doing, and also today's what I believe to be a keystone cop situation around the White House, the Capitol, and the Supreme Court, as people were scurrying all over the place, and again, security telling people just to get out, just to get out, and that over just a small plane that just went into the wrong airspace. It's almost as if there's no organized plan yet. So we want to get Stephen Quayle's take on that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie with our guest this hour, Stephen Quayle. Stephen, of course, is an expert in many things. We rely on him for his expertise. He's the author of a number of books. He has investigated biological warfare, giants from the old days. He does it all. His website is Steve Quayle, Quayle.com. Stephen, today's situation, lots to talk with you about this hour, but today's situation to me seemed out of just total disorganization. It was like a Keystone Cop situation. Did you get that same feeling?
Absolutely, George. And I think the thing that was amazing is that with all of the time that Washington, D.C. has been preparing and obviously recognizing they're the number one target for whatever is going to happen, the people who seemingly rushed everyone hither and yon basically couldn't tell people where to go to be safe, and even some of the congressmen and senators who were speaking had to wait a number of minutes before they knew. It was a comedy of errors, but I think what people need to understand is that there was specific intelligence that I'm being told, Doug Hagman is being told from insiders, that there are extreme concerns for aerial incidents over Washington, D.C. And so that's kind of the background that took place. So when this unfortunate student pilot or new pilot ventured too close to the no-fly zone, it set not so much just the panic into motion that everyone had been talking about, but the intelligence agencies and a lot of people were concerned because they picked up, George, in the last several weeks, some very specific intelligence, and Washington, D.C. is the number one target. So knowing that, I find it incredibly amazing that they would present to the world a Keystone Cop. I think that's a good definition type hurry people hither and yon, but they didn't know where to put them, and it seemed that it took everybody pretty much off guard.
These two F-16 military jets got up awfully fast to get to this plane. Why couldn't they do this during 9/11?
Well, the bottom line is the number one question everybody, I think, has to ask themselves about 9/11 is, with the protocols that have been established for incidents like this since the Cold War days, you know, when you find out who stood down the fighters on that day, you'll find out who had to have had knowledge of it. And by the way, I've been told by military, high-ranking military people, that everything that was said and stated about the 9/11 intercepts was a lie that came officially from government sources. I mean, people who love the country have had their lives surrendered for this country are basically telling the American citizens, look, this is a breach of protocol. You know, there's so many theories, when I say theories and explanations for 9/11, but when you see how fast these things got in the air after 9/11, it had to be pretty much a wake-up call to say, look, if they could get up that fast in this type of situation, why and where were they for 2 hours prior, you know, on the day of 9/11?
I'm going to read some things about today's situation. Also at the White House, press were informed about the evacuation after a Secret Service agent stuck his head into the briefing room and screamed, "Get out! Evacuate!" An alert that was supposed to go out over the public announcement system apparently did not happen. Many reporters who started to run out of the briefing room were told by Secret Service uniformed officers to get back into the building and get downstairs. Moments later, they started shouting again, "Get out of here! Get out of here!" This thing was disorganized, Stephen, and to me that's a scary situation with a little plane that merely goes off course. I don't know who's in charge of security, whether it's Terry Gaynor and his group, but they better start working at this and working at it pretty darn fast, don't you think?
Well, absolutely, and as you and I have been talking over the years, George, it's been obvious to everyone that the synchronization, coordination, and communication between departments is woefully lacking. I think today was a real-world illustration of how many lives are at stake when people don't know the protocol. Now, obviously, the information coming out is the senators and congressmen went to the bunkers. Mrs. Bush and Nancy Reagan went to a secured area. But again, I'm almost amazed at the casual indifference that seems to be present in D.C. until an event like this happens. And people have got to put this into perspective. This is the most illustrative event that has taken place since 9/11, and it showed just again we are woefully unprepared. Now, the story that I'm getting behind the scenes, and Doug has verified this, Doug Hagman of Northeast Intelligence Network, is they're very concerned about low-flying jets, and not that the jet will crash into anything, but weapons of mass destruction on board the jet. And that's fascinating. Within about 3 hours, Doug had turned that up, and Doug was contacted by some people, independent of the people I talked to, that validated the fact that they are really on alert for a weapons of mass destruction. If that's the case, George, then you've got to see that if any type of biological or dirty radiological event or even a fission event, meaning a real atom bomb, I mean, there's a lot of people that are going to die just simply because they had no place to go, they had no direction, the warning signals that were supposed to be broadcast didn't go, and one hand didn't know what the other hand was doing.
Well, and what about the system that's supposed to be on top of the White House to knock out any approaching plane or small missile? I mean, I didn't hear anything about that today, did you?
Nothing. And again, it all pretty much centered around, in addition to the two F-16s, two Black Hawk helicopters were also dispatched. But by the time they got in the air, if you see the timeline, it was 17 minutes difference. So I think that what is obvious to everyone is that as much talk as there is about terrorism, counterterrorism, being prepared, not being prepared, Department of Homeland Security, all of the issues that are out there, this took everybody in D.C. by surprise. And what I guess I'm trying to really specifically define is that they were notified that there were aerial threats, and specifically for these next several weeks leading into months that they picked up in intelligence over the last 2 months by intercepted computers, wiretaps, the whole nine yards. So it's not even, you could maybe understand the screw-up if this just took them by total surprise, but the fact is they were expecting this, and that's, you know, on the 11th, etc. But the point being is that they had plenty of intel, so somebody who had the intel, again, was not communicating, and it's amazing, isn't it, now that we have a security czar that still A won't talk to B and B can't tell C and C doesn't know what to do when the whole thing starts coming down.
Now they're going to have to reevaluate this in pretty darn fast. You know, I wanted to talk with you about North Korea and Iran before this thing happened today. So that's that situation, Steve. The North Koreans, something strange here. I mean, they're acting very, very cocky these days. You know, you would think that a country that may have some nukes would at least temper a little bit what they're saying. I mean, they're being very aggressive about their program now. What's happening there?
Well, first of all, North Korea has purchased, long before they were in the process of manufacturing their own warheads, they were like everyone else. If you had the bucks, George, after the breakup of the former Soviet Union, you could get anything you wanted. What you couldn't get out of that theater, you could go and buy from Pakistan through Dr. Khan. as you are aware, North Korea has been selling missile technology to the world. And another story that I think people have got to understand, last week's firing of what was called a short-range missile, that wasn't a short-range missile from my sources. My sources said that was the third stage of a intercontinental ballistic missile, and about a year ago, North Korea fired, and this was kind of swept under the rug, but they fired two dummy warheads, one at the Hawaiian Islands and one at Alaska. You remember the story about the missile washing up in Alaska?
Yes,
and
I
so
remember that.
Putting this together, one of the things I have, as you know, my major issue in contention with the official government mouthpieces, they just haven't told the truth for so long. I almost believe now they're incapable of telling the truth. One minute they are believed to have four warheads, the next minute it's six, next minute they're processing enough uranium and plutonium to make eight. And I think the telling situation is that the defectors, and here's something that's astonishing to me, we have had some of the highest-ranking North Korean defectors who have gone into great detail of what North Korea possesses, what they're planning to do, their whole battle plan of attack, and yet, again, that information kind of gets skirted under the rug, just like when the Russian KGB archivist, Vasily Matrokhin, defected and told the United States government, especially the director of the FBI in those days, of the planting of strategic nuclear weapons within the continental United States, got swept under the rug. So when you're dealing with North Korea, you're dealing with a very, you know, most people don't realize North Korea's got, I think, 2.2 to 2.3 million men under arms. We know the strangeness of the regime, but we also know that this taunting, that they have to be taunting for a reason. In other words, it appears that China has backed out of, you know, going along with any type of oil embargo on the North, and the North has been saber-rattling now for, you know, 40 years, but it seems like it's escalating. And what I've been watching, and I think the listeners on Coast should watch, is that it seems like whenever North Korea rattles its saber, within 2 to 3 hours of the time that one issues a statement, Iran issues a statement. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have. But, you know, the North Koreans are either bluffing with a pretty poor poker hand, or they've got a handful of aces, Stephen, and I don't know which one it is, quite frankly.
Well, here's the deal. When you get brinksmanship on this level, somebody at some point flinches. And as you know, Japan has also now started to throw a fit. And Japan and obviously Korea have a long history of not getting along, and China and Japan. The whole South Asia theater has heated up dramatically, George. And then if you take into account that based on, again, understanding what I'm saying is based on defectors and what I call non-lying intelligence, North Korea does have the ability to reach out and smack with nuclear weapons. Now, will they do it? That's the big question. And when does A preempt B, meaning when does North Korea say, well, we know that the United States is going to attack us? I mean, people are now starting to recognize that this is not just like the old Cold War war of words, that if the North explodes a nuclear weapon, the point is, I think that that will put this thing onto the immediacy of the United States having to deal with. So, well, you know, are they bluffing or are they going to pull through? Well, we'll know within the next week to 10 days whether they're going to detonate the nuke.
The International Atomic Energy Agency chief, Mohammad El-Boradi, says that North Korea has already enough plutonium to make up to 6 bombs from an earlier batch of fuel rods at the reactor. Now, with some of the latest ones they've taken out, they could get up to what you said was that number 8. And I just don't know if the nations who are totally opposed to North Korea obtaining a nuke are going to wait much longer. In addition to that, then you've got the Iranian situation, as we've been talking about. Is this going to be a double whammy, Stephen?
I think it is, because you've got to understand, and we've got to understand, that the North Koreans, we all have got to figure out that they have made it a point of their weapon sale to make sure that Iran has upgraded missiles. Now, again, it's not only having a warhead, but how to deliver it. And you can either use ballistic missiles, submarines, as you know, or you can go low-key. You can put them a short-range missile with a nuclear warhead and move it in on a shipping container, a cargo container. What I'm specifically saying is I see that the timing of the announcements that North Korea makes are followed by hours with Iran. So it's nobody's guess that Iran and Korea are are working together, George, it would seem to me that if they have a mutual defense pact, which is alluded to, and they even not only allude to it, they declare they have one, then I would think that if Iran feels that the threat to their nuclear reactors is real enough, then they might get their surrogate buddy to start something, because they know we can't be in both theaters fully deployed as they would try and divide us.
Stay with us. Stephen Quayle, our guest. We're going to open up the phone lines now, give you an opportunity to chat with him about some of these really heavy issues we've been talking about. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Hey, don't forget to pick up the After Dark newsletter. You get 14 issues for the price of 12. And when you do that, you'll also get the special June UFO edition, edited by our own webmaster, Lex Lonehood, is putting together a UFO special for the June issue of the After Dark newsletter. A couple ways to get it. You can go online at coasttocoastam.com or also call this toll-free number, 1-888-727-5505. By the way, special thanks to all of you who are participating in sponsoring a young child under this program that we are working with Children International. We are well on our goal of 500, and if you can afford it, it's $18 a month. We'd love for you to sponsor a child. So many of you are doing that now. On the left-hand side of our website, coasttocoastam.com, you'll see a flashing yellow banner that you can click that. That'll take you right to the website, and then you can sponsor a child that way, or you can call a toll-free number, which I will give you a little bit later on tonight. Back in a moment. You You know, Stephen, what do you do with the North Koreans? I mean, do you sit back and let them develop their nuclear program and their capabilities? They may have one already, as they claim they do. Or, you know, or do you attack and try to annihilate them, and then all of a sudden you're going to have to do that forever because, I mean, no one will ever trust anybody again. What do you do? What a dilemma.
Well, yeah, you've got to offer them something that's more important than thermonuclear annihilation of them, and their attitude is that before you know, they get annihilated, they're going to do plenty of harm to the United States. So this is a really a world class problem right now, and then it even becomes more compounded when you figure out that you know, again, in collusion with Iran, they're both simultaneously reinforcing each other's pocketbooks and weapons delivery system as well as the weapons themselves.
A tense situation.
And you know, you brought up in your opening statement tonight about the two scientists that have died. Both David Banks and Todd Kaupeli or whatever they can pronounce his name. You realize that those are the 55th and 56th scientists to die? And,
I know.
And last year, I think we did a show about this time when Dr. Eugene Maloff was murdered.
Yep.
And that was on May 14th. So last year in May, we had William, McGuire, who was found floating in the river. His body was chopped up in three different suitcases, and he was one of the world's leading microbiologists on biocontainment. We had Dr. Maloff, of course, who was cold fusion. Then we had a Russian on the 25th of May, a lady named Antonina Kresniakov, who died of an Ebola accident. And then David Banks, for people who need to understand, he was only 55, George, and he was ahead of Australia's quarantine authority, but he was an expert in swine human transmission of viruses. And the number one concern in the world right now is transgenic species jumping diseases, i.e. avian flu virus, etc. And then Todd, the gentleman that you were talking about, he died from hemorrhagic pancreatitis, and usually when your pancreas begins to go, you have some knowledge of it. So I got to tell you, based on what was stolen out of Los Alamos nuclear lab, and by the way, that whole story about nothing being stolen is a lie from the people that I've talked to. The point is that he was saying that he and another gentleman, as you know, were scapegoats. So those guys died on the same day, on the 8th of May, you know? And
that
I think that
weird.
When you look at that in perspective, you have, as you know, last year we had probably every major nuclear weapons lab in the United States was violated. There were missing disks. There was missing data. There was a complete meltdown in security. And then they referred to everything as kind of cover their rear end moves, and no one ever got the true story. So I'm going on record saying this, that it's not unusual to take a whole airplane load of people down to kill one guy. Obviously, that happened over the Black Sea 2 years ago. It's not unusual to expedite a form of cancer or a hemorrhagic form of pancreatitis. Notice the hemorrhagic. So, I mean, you know, when they've got a million ways to kill these guys, and I'm on record tonight on Coast to Coast saying both these men were murdered. They did not die of, quote, just an accidental death, because when you trace back what they were working on and you trace back what's at stake, someone had to silence the Los Alamos nuclear lab scientists, and someone did, for reasons I believe would be related to his ability to understand what was going on in a transgenic outbreak of a species-jumping disease. David Banks was also murdered in that airplane crash.
I noticed too, Stephen, that since we've been talking about this over the past year and a half, finally some mainstream media are beginning to look at what is going on here, and they're beginning to do some stories on this. But
yeah,
it took so long.
Again, you know, and you know, again, my congratulations for you breaking the story, because, you know, when we first started talking about the dead scientists, we got the typical, oh, there's so many microbiologists. But see, these aren't just ordinary microbiologists. These aren't just ordinary scientists. These are the who's who in the world. And, you know, when somebody talks about a third-tier biolab, that's exactly how the bioengineers and the weapons designers, they don't put their most top-secret stuff at Harvard or any of the big medical schools. They go into some of the most obscure universities, because that way, when they're dealing with scientists who are out of the limelight, they can compartmentalize the work that's going on. So, I mean, this is number 55 and 56, and 1 year ago, to date, this week, you know, we had the situation with Dr. Maloff being murdered, and then we had the murder of William T. McGuire to the day last year, and then the Russian bioweapons scientist who was working at Vector, which is the Soviet Union's premier bioweapons lab. So, you know, I mean, I don't think it's coincidence, and for the people that want to go on my website, we've got it detailed under the Dead Scientist link. And unfortunately, George, it's not going to get shorter. It's only going to get longer.
I had an email about 4 months ago from someone who said, sure, this doesn't exist. Come on, where's the data? Where are their names? I referred this individual to your website, Stephen, because you've been cataloging this for all of us. And that person emailed me back and went, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So
and,
once
and,
they
know,
saw
again, all we're telling people is, the stuff that you bring to their attention and that I document is for people to go and do their own investigation. And again, you're not, you know, what people, you remember we talked about David Kelly too, George?
Yes,
you know,
the Brit.
The British head of the Ministry of Defense's bioweapons lab, and then he committed suicide. Well, all that stuff. And then just recently now, the British have come back saying, hey, look, this whole investigation was skewed. It wasn't real. He didn't kill himself. He was murdered.
Well, it wasn't the EMT on the scene.
Yes,
said you know, for a guy who was supposed to have slit his wrist, there wasn't much blood there at the scene.
No, and the body was changed in positions from the different groups of people that first encountered it, from the EMT to the people that found his body in the park, etc. So, you know, when people say to you or I, oh, this is just all random, I think why most people want to deny this is because the idea of a group of beings and entities murdering the premier bioweapon scientists in the world, and biologists and virologists and epidemiologists, the guys that could solve the problems, when they all start to disappear, and then we get the continual harangue that we're headed for a world pandemic, blah, 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 they go and dig up Spanish flu victims, then you can begin to understand that these people are being murdered for a reason.
If you believe that this group of globalists or the Illuminati, or call them whatever you want, wants to reduce the world's population from 6 billion down to who knows what, 500 million, then you begin to see some possibilities here. Let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hi, this is Bob, traveling north on the 101.
101 up there in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I'm just headed north out of Los Angeles.
Well, welcome, Bob. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, George. Thank you for taking my call. Stephen, hello.
Hello.
I'd like to compliment you on your diligence in digging the truth up. I appreciate that. I want you to know you are one of the three sources I use to triangulate my own opinion. A book is only as good as the author who writes it. This strange thing going on in our world today. Who's pulling the strings? I haven't figured that out, but I think I see the big picture coming. North Korea, are there people enslaved, or are they allowed to migrate or leave?
Steven?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand this question, George.
Can the people of North Korea immigrate if they care to?
I don't think they can.
Well, no, I mean, first of all, if you try and get out, unless you escape through China or, you know, there are very few ways out, you're usually executed. The people that have been able to escape from North Korea have been high-ranking either in the government or military. And again, when you've got the highest-ranking defectors in the history of North Korea coming to the United States and telling us what's going on with their nuclear weapons development, the possession of nuclear weapons, and the ability to deliver those weapons, that's real intel, and that's the thing I was complaining about and have been complaining about for over a dozen years, is that, you know, tell the American people the truth, and then the American people can respond to the truth, but quit coming up with this psychotic, almost double-minded, maybe they've got them, maybe they don't, when everybody knows they got them.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, Stan from Brooklyn.
Stan, welcome to the program, and you are on
WABC.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Steve.
Listen, I want to ask Steve if he knows about the electronic pulse device to destroy the electronic pulse. I heard it on your show. I heard it on from John Loftus on John Bachelor. And I even heard tonight Loftus said that North Korea might have it, and Iran has been experimenting with missiles to convey it. Steve, do you know about this, and what are the odds are that one of these countries are actually going to use this against us?
Well, first of all, an EMP device, electromagnetic pulse, they have EMP bombs that are actually non-nuclear, but electromagnetic pulse is a byproduct of a fission weapon exploding, usually in the air. The question is, and then in the intelligence community, it's not just worried about a nuclear airburst over, let's say, the Midwest that would take out most of the power infrastructure of solid-state devices, but it's the fact that even a popular science, a popular mechanic over the years have carried stories on how you can build very cheap electromagnetic guns, and so the technology is there to do that, and doesn't have to come by way of a nuke.
What are the odds that one of these countries is going to use this against us?
Oh, I'd say based on the Chinese white paper and based on Korea's battle plan, that we will be hit with an electromagnetic pulse attack and a major cyber attack upon our electronic infrastructure prior to, you know, the fur flying.
What would the retaliation be, Steve, if we knew a missile was launched? Of course, we didn't know if it was going to be trying to hit us on land or not, but let's say it did explode up there and it wiped out a certain region. It was not that successful to block out the whole country. How would we retaliate on something like that? Right. Obviously, we'd know where the missile came from, unless, as some experts have said on this program, it's launched from some missile launcher off some ship, and then you have no idea what the country of origin might be.
Absolutely, or it's been pre-positioned, George, as you know, that's been my major concern. Well, obviously, if it's a nuclear device, all nuclear weapons are traceable to at least their origin by the analysis of the actual uranium or plutonium that's used, depending on what type of device. But the point is I think President Bush has already gone on record, and as you know, we now are reserving the right to retaliate and use tactical nuclear weapons, so we would respond in a nuclear way.
Let's go to our west of the Rockies line. Welcome to, now let's pick it up. Let's go east first. We just went west. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, guys. It's Sean from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, Sean. Go ahead, sir.
Hey. I guess it's a small group of questions. With what happened today, what's the chances of someone sticking a small nuclear weapon in a small plane and turning off the radio, getting kind of close, you know, like 3 or 4 miles away from, you know, the White House and all these other buildings, and you have, you know, like complete chaos, people running out into the streets? What would happen if it just exploded? I mean, you couldn't really shoot it down.
Well, and in essence, let's call it what it is, a suicide-type, light plane carrying a nuclear device. That's mm-hmm. exactly, Sean, what the people in Washington and the different intelligence agencies are worried about, and that's what I was trying to get across, is they have specific intelligence on that, and that's why the panic went into the level that it did. The response,
you're right,
to the panic. So, in essence, what I'm telling you is there's specific intel on that very subject.
They are not concerned, and I'll put that in quotes, of course, about a small Cessna coming into airspace that may or may not try to plow into something, because that alone can't do the kind of damage that the perpetrators would want. What they are concerned about, and you're absolutely right, is what that small plane could be carrying.
Absolutely.
And that's why there's that kind of panic now.
And they also are concerned, too, with high-speed boats. When I say high-speed boats, like some of the very fast 50, 60-knot boats that also can do the same thing. And what Sean was saying, George, is a point. When you're dealing with nukes, I mean, how close do you have to get to cause a chaos? Unfortunately, had a nuclear device been detonated, even a radiological bomb, there would have been a lot of people exposed needlessly, because of the plan to deal with this, by the very stuff that you and I were talking about at the top of the hour, it was just a comedy of errors. It was like Keystone Cops, and the panic was real, but the program that was supposed to be in place to have to be able to deal with this stuff obviously doesn't work.
Let me ask you the devil's advocate question for a moment, Stephen, that all this is a bunch of nonsense and bunk and hype and fear-mongering. None of this will exist. After 9/11, we've done, let's say, a tremendous job in dealing with terrorism. We're annihilating terrorists around the planet. They can't get through to us. Is that a possibility? Could that be a real statement, or is that just way off base?
Well, I think it could be partially true, because the whole thing can be a psyops, being a psychological operation designed to generate fear so that the American people will, you know, walk into the national ID card. And as you know, we're getting to the point where it seems like, you know, we're not seeing common sense being exerted by Washington on the borders, et cetera. So that is a secondary effect, and I think it's a very real one. But unfortunately, the New World Order, you said it a few minutes ago, they're dedicated to taking out, you know, let's say, whether what's 3 or 4 billion, there's still a lot of people to die. So they do need, George, they need this worldwide confrontation, this conflagration to accomplish that. And that's why, again, look, I don't believe for a minute that we're just dealing with one group of quote-unquote terrorists. I believe we're dealing with puppets on strings, and the string masters or the puppet masters are the guys that will do anything, including they want to take away all of the American citizens, your and my rights. And I still believe that, obviously, we've seen the failure this week. What they came out and said $4.5 billion worth of TSA transportation safety stuff doesn't work right. So, you know, are we safer today? And in interest of honesty and fairness, there have been some tremendously successful operations. But that doesn't mean that the successful ones, as you know, we got to be right 100% of the time. Is it a psyop? Of course, psychological operation. Are there people being blamed for some of this stuff that are just nothing more than the glove on the hand that fills them? Of course. But the point I think that people have got to understand, you still have renegades within any organization, and there are people who ideologically would like nothing better to turn Washington, D.C. into, I guess you'd say, a marble dump.
Well, or Hawaii or Los Angeles or Alaska or any place else that they might be able to reach with their tentacles of nuclear weapons.
And Doug Hagman had an interesting bit of information. I've got to share this because he said, listen, he said, Steve, he said, my sources aren't telling me this is a one-shot deal in Washington. They're concerned it's concurrent with multiple cities, and also they're very concerned about sequential, you know, day one. So the point is that the concern is real. Who's generating it? We call them the New World Order, the Illuminists, the International Satanist Conspiracy. The point is that there's too many events, George, that are pointing to the fact that something is going to happen. And when it happens, based on what we saw today, we are not prepared. And that's why my hope and desire, and I do what I do, is to get people to think about how to become victors and not victims.
And there's no doubt about it, Stephen. There is a group out there that wants to see the United States fall to its knees. And we're going to keep pounding away at them as well. I see a full show coming up with you, Mr. Quayle. So get ready for that phone call from us, okay?
Thank you, George. Good night, everyone.
Take care. We'll be back in a moment. ESP, you better get your extrasensory perception ready. I think we're going to need it. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Podcasting, the new way to get Coast to Coast AM to your computer. Available to all StreamLink subscribers at coasttocoastam.com.